Olen baleva peranima nefesh yehudi homia.
Israel's northern borders have always been breathtaking, haunting, and unpredictably violent. Here, amid widespread tranquility, a pervasive hint of danger lingers. On May 15, 1974, 105 high school students from Svat bedded down at the Netiv Meir Elementary School, only a few miles from Lebanon, after a terrorist alert had interrupted their scheduled three-day hiking trip. A few guards and teachers who would prove useless during the storm to come accompanied them. The students had planned to sleep in the woods, but authorities ordered them to spend the night inside the school for their own safety. Why? A couple of days before, soldiers had found the tracks of three Palestinian terrorists crossing the border. The whereabouts of these terrorists were unknown. One by one, the children fell asleep. Girls on the third floor, boys on the second. By 3 a.m., all was quiet. At 4 a.m., chaos erupted. Having already killed three members of a family and wounded the fourth, a five-year-old, as well as another man, the three terrorists headed towards the Netiv Meir Elementary School, where they planned to ambush students arriving the next morning. But when the Palestinians reached the school's parking lot in the dead of the night, to their surprise, they spotted several empty buses that hinted of a group of students sleeping within the building. Bent on mayhem, the three men burst into the school while firing their weapons in the air. Panic ensued. A few students escaped by diving out windows or running through unlocked doors. Some broke limbs in the process, but their injuries were a small price to pay for reaching safety. Nearly 80 kids were not so fortunate. Within minutes, the terrorists had herded them into a small room on the second floor. Then, they ringed the room with explosives. As death lurked, hope departed. Negotiations between the terrorists and Israeli authorities began in the morning. Many decades later, the details of those negotiations are no longer important. But the courage and fear felt by those innocent captives, intertwined with their alternating optimism and pessimism, as the talks ebbed and flowed, remind us of the dangers faced then and now. Ilana, one of the teenage captives, wrote,
"Dear Mom and Dad, it's now 11:25 in the morning, and I don't know how many more hours I have left to live, so I'm writing to you. I'm sorry, Mom, that I didn't listen to you and went on the trip. Yes, I know you didn't force me to stay, but you were worried and you preferred I didn't go, but I did go, because I knew what I had to do. I want to say thank you for education, the education you gave me, and the beautiful years I've had, and it's all thanks to you. I am now 15 and a half years old, and if I'm sentenced to die, I will die quietly, with dignity and faith. Yes, faith is what you gave me. You always said to me that life without faith is pointless, and much more painful. And now in these hard hours, I'm full of belief, and I believe you are right. Life does not give much to a man. He does not have a choice in almost anything, not when and where he will be born and to which parents. But for me, it was great. I, a religious girl in Israel with wonderful parents, you. Great hours I did not have. I didn't have that, and very likely I won't ever achieve that. Mom, don't cry a lot when I die. When Rivka will give birth, name the baby after me, Lon or Lana, and educate him like me to be strong, and that he will know what his purpose is in life and the reason he was born. I know you have had a difficult life before and after I was born, and it will be even more difficult after I die. But always remember the pain and the suffering have always brought with them hours of happiness and satisfaction. I'm not crying. My eyes are dry. My death is not painful to me, and I am not sorry. And when I will recite Shema Israel in my last hour, I will be thinking of you. I had to go on this trip. We must not stop our lives. The danger is in every place waiting for us, and if a decree was made in the heavens, it will always be carried out. If we will hide in the shelters, the dangers will be greater. And it is better to live normal human lives and be killed on Kiddush Hashem. Give this letter, which is my last in this world, to all my family to read, and send them regards and lots of love from me. And to all my friends and neighbors, send wishes of good luck. This is the last chance. In one small hour, I will be gone. Yours always. See you sometime. With lots of love. Ilana.
Ilana miscalculated. An hour later, she was still alive. 6 hours later, she wasn't. Ilana perished in a small room crisscrossed by a hail of flying lead, racked by explosions, and filled with screams. She lay in a pool of blood among the jumbled, contorted bodies of 19 other students who failed to escape those last frenetic seconds. She died in a town called Meilat. Terrorists killed Ilana and those other students for no justifiable reason. But Meilat stands for far more than its suffering. For those who live along Israel's northern borders, the threat of violence, of terror, has always been present. Unfortunately, however, that is not the only threat that persists here. Economic issues plague communities along the border, where medical services are inferior to those available in the nation's center. And this is where the concept of the kibbutz, a community devoted to socialistic ideas, was born, almost died, and now struggles to reform. So why live along Israel's northern borders? What was life like there? What's it like now? How did Jewish settlers meet the challenges? Why live there then? Why do people continue to live there now? What has the courage of the few who chose to brave hardship and desolation meant to the state of Israel? I set out to Israel, where I've been a frequent visitor, to find answers to those complex questions.
Be'atzinu el